Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Borderlands and World History. 1700-1914 is an edited academic volume associated with Paul Reedman, Cynthia Radding, and Chad Bryant, published by Palgrave Macmillan. It examines borderlands as historical spaces shaped by empire, state formation, migration, environmental change, economic pressure, and cultural negotiation across the modern era before the First World War. Rather than treating borderlands as marginal edges of national histories, the book places them at the center of global historical analysis. Its essays range across the Americas, Europe, Africa, Asia, and Australia, showing how borders were made, challenged, lived, and reinterpreted by states and local populations. The volume belongs to Global History, Borderland Studies, and Modern Historical Scholarship. Its purpose is not to provide a single universal theory, but to demonstrate that borderlands can be compared across regions when attention is given to institutions, landscapes, identities, and the uneven expansion of modern state power. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, borderlands as global historical spaces rather than regional exceptions. A central contribution of the volume is its effort to move borderland studies beyond the regional frameworks in which the field often developed. Much borderland scholarship has been rooted in specific areas, especially the North American Southwest, European frontier zones, or imperial peripheries. This book asks what happens when borderlands are treated as a global phenomenon across the period 1700-1914. The result is a comparative frame that highlights recurring problems without flattening regional differences. Borderlands appear as places where sovereignty was uncertain, overlapping, or actively contested. They were not simply lines on maps, but lived zones where political authority, social practice, and cultural belonging did not always align. By assembling cases from multiple continents, the book shows that the making of borders was part of wider transformations in world history, including imperial expansion, nationalism, commercial integration, and new administrative techniques. The global approach is important because it reveals borderlands as productive historical spaces. They generated hybrid institutions, strategic accommodations, resistance, and new identities. This shifts analysis away from seeing them as backward margins and toward seeing them as places where the limits of state power became especially visible. Secondly, modern state formation and the pressure to define territory. The period covered by the book was marked by the growing power of states to classify, administer, tax, police, and map territory. One major theme is how this expansion altered borderlands. Earlier frontiers often allowed for flexible forms of authority, layered jurisdiction, or negotiated relations among empires, local communities, merchants, settlers, and indigenous peoples. As modern states became more bureaucratic and territorially ambitious, they increasingly sought clearer borders and more legible populations. This did not mean that borders instantly became fixed or effective. Instead, the book emphasizes the gap between state projects and local realities. Borderlanders often adapted to new lines, ignored them, profited from them, or resisted their implications. The rise of national borders also changed the meaning of movement, trade, landholding, and allegiance. Activities that had once been ordinary could become smuggling, trespass, illegal migration, or political disloyalty. The significance of this theme lies in the way it connects high politics to everyday life. Border making was not only a diplomatic or cartographic process, it reshaped how people understood security, property, community, and obligation. Thirdly, landscape, environment, and territorial imagination in border regions. The book gives attention to landscape and environment as more than background conditions. Borderlands were shaped by rivers, deserts, mountains, forests, coasts, islands, grazing lands, and zones of settlement. And these features affected how states and communities imagined territory. Natural features could help define boundaries, but they could also frustrate administrative control. A river might appear to be a clear dividing line on a map, while functioning in practice as a corridor for trade, kinship, labor, and communication. Similarly, sparsely governed or ecologically difficult regions could sustain local autonomy long after rulers claimed them as part of imperial or national territory. The environmental dimension matters because it complicates purely political accounts of borders. Territoriality was not only declared by governments, it was mediated through land use, mobility, climate, resource extraction, and settlement patterns. By including case studies concerned with landscape change and territorial formation, the volume shows that borderlands were ecological as well as political spaces. This approach helps explain why border making could be uneven, contested, and slow. It also reveals how environmental transformation, such as new settlement or infrastructure, could make state authority more concrete. Fourthly, borderlands as sites of identity formation and cultural negotiation. Another major theme is the relationship between borderlands and identity. In many border regions, people lived among competing languages, religions, legal traditions, ethnic categories, and political loyalties. The book shows that identities in such places were rarely simple reflections of official borders. Borderlanders could identify with local communities, imperial authorities, religious institutions, ethnic groups, kinship networks, or emerging nations, sometimes combining these affiliations in ways that challenge state expectations. This is especially important for the 19th century, when nationalism increasingly encouraged the idea that territory, people, language, and political loyalty should coincide. Borderlands exposed the weakness of that assumption. They were places where national categories had to be taught, enforced, negotiated, or resisted. The volume also suggests that border identities were not merely passive residues of older worlds. They could be actively produced through schools, churches, military service, migration, trade, local memory, and political conflict. This theme gives the book significance beyond diplomatic history. It shows that borders worked through social and cultural processes as much as through treaties and maps, and that people living near borders often shaped national identities rather than simply receiving them. Lastly, comparative method and the limits of a world history of borderlands. The edited format allows the book to cover a broad range of places and problems, but it also creates a methodological tension. The title suggests a very wide world history, while any collection of essays must necessarily be selective. The value of the book lies less in complete global coverage than in the comparative questions it enables. How did empires translate frontier claims into territorial borders? How did local populations respond when older forms of movement or allegiance were restricted? How did landscapes, institutions, and identities interact in regions where state authority was incomplete or contested? These questions can travel across cases even when the regions differ greatly. At the same time, the volume cannot provide equal treatment of every continent, frontier system, or border regime. Readers should therefore approach it as a structured intervention in global borderland scholarship, rather than as an exhaustive survey. This limitation is also useful, because it highlights the difficulty of writing borderlands history at a global scale. The book demonstrates that comparison must preserve local specificity. Its strength is in opening analytical pathways, not in reducing borderlands to a single model. In conclusion, Borderlands in World History 1700-1914 is best suited to scholars, graduate students, advanced undergraduates, and readers with a serious interest in global history, border studies, imperial history, nationalism, and historical geography. It offers intellectual benefits rather than practical instruction. Readers gain a sharper understanding of how borders emerge through conflict, negotiation, administration, environmental constraint, and social adaptation. The book is particularly useful for those who want to compare borderlands without assuming that all frontiers followed the same path toward modern state control. It also helps readers think critically about the difference between mapped borders and lived borderlands, a distinction that remains important for understanding migration, sovereignty, and identity in later periods. Compared with many books in the field, its distinctive feature is its deliberate global reach across the modern era before 1914. Instead of concentrating on one famous frontier or one national boundary, it brings together diverse cases to show that borderlands were central to world historical change. Its limitation is that it cannot be a complete world history of every borderland, but that is also part of its realistic value. It stands out as a comparative academic volume that broadens the field while preserving attention to regional complexity. If you would like to support P. Reidman, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.